Welcome to Movie Banter.
Hey, we're back.
Yeah, we never really went away.
Well, that's true.
We haven't gone away. Been there, just quiet.
Just loitering. Yeah, this is a never-ending podcast. We just stay quiet and then start up again. Yeah, I'm John Sands.
Never-ending podcast.
I don't know what you're doing now.
It's a song from the 80s.
Oh, I see. Right.
Before your time.
Yeah. Yeah. We were talking about this the other day. I've never seen Never-Ending Story.
Not?
No.
Because it's false marketing. Because it's not an actual never-ending story.
Well, you say that. You haven't seen it. You wouldn't know,
would you? Well, I can assume.
Yeah, you know what they say about assumptions? You make an ass out of umption.
You have no umption.
You don't have to umption your ass, whatever you do.
I mean like that. Listen,
break it down, Paul.
Oh, whoa, whoa.
Yeah, no. Okay. Anyway.
So what are we talking about? I've no idea. Well, Never-Ending Story.
You've hidden the thing. Yes, Never-Ending Story. What are we talking about? Oh, because you started singing some weird song. I know.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
We're just welcoming people to the podcast, right?
Hello.
I haven't said I'm Paul Carenza yet.
Fair enough. And who are you?
I'm Brian.
Gemma Arden? No, that's not right.
No. I'm Jennifer Masters.
Allegedly.
And who are you?
I've done that.
Have you?
I did that first.
Who are you?
I've forgotten now.
Some straggler.
Yeah.
Down the streets.
Loitering.
Heckle each other.
Yeah, I live on the internet.
So this week, we're talking about Paul.
Yes,
and I'm
not
Paul.
All about you.
So,
no.
How are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. Yeah, I'm all right. I'm
excellent,
all right.
That's that done.
Lovely. I'm going to do the mechanic, which is John.
Not
he's
kind
a mechanic.
Of, I'm more technician, but yeah. And then Never Let Me Go, which is Jen's nickname. No, I don't know how that works.
Never Let Me Go.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
And Morning Glory, which is, let's not even go there. And Tangled,
which is how this train of conversation is going.
Pretty much, yes.
So, yeah.
Okay, so that's what we're doing this fortnight. I'm not saying this week, but...
In real time.
Yeah. Okay. So, we could just start.
Let's kick off with Paul.
Okay.
Because we've all seen this. Have we all seen this?
Yeah, I saw it. Have you seen it?
I have seen it.
Saw it on Valentine's Day. A single depressed people's trip out to the cinema.
Yeah, it's lovely.
So, yeah, take our minds off.
Any couples there on Valentine's Day?
Not by the end. Not once I'd finished with them.
Dear.
Ew.
Yeah, I don't know how that works. Not that I noticed, but nor was I really looking around. Yeah.
It was a very, very full cinema screening, so...
I think it opened Monday, didn't it? Quite cleverly.
Yeah, I know, which was marketing. Well, Jen and I were talking about this, in that it was a slightly... I couldn't work... I mean, because... Yeah, I mean, Jen made the point, obviously, it's sort of a possibly an anti-Valentine's film of sort, or it's...
Yeah.
Well, but it's that would be just as true if it had opened on the Friday. As
what,
in people
Friday
could still...
Before?
Yeah, if it opened on the conventional Friday...
Yeah.
Opening,
maybe it gives people, you know, gives singletons something to do or look forward to on actual Valentine's. It's a bit more of an event.
Yeah,
you know?
If it was open Friday, surely I would have thought most people just would have thought, no, we'll go and see it on Monday.
Maybe it's due out this Friday.
No,
and
it's
then
not.
They thought they'll bring out three, you know, as a preview
for
Monday.
No, but the actual official release date was Monday.
It's true.
I'm sure there is a logical argument, but it just made, I couldn't work out why they had to make the specific actual opening day.
I think it's because of what I said.
My point is, but that is just as true if it had already opened the previous Friday, as per usual.
Well, could it be? What else opened? Was it like True Grit opened and maybe a couple of other things? So they thought, well, let True Grit have the weekend.
And then this weekend, something else is opening. So we'll sort of do it midweek between the two. See, that makes more sense. Yeah. Why didn't you think of that?
Yeah.
You see?
Go me. It's because it's my film.
It's all about
it. More about Paul than Paul. Exactly.
True.
Paul's mum.
Your wife probably does. Yeah.
That's true. So, yeah.
But yeah, so this is it's basically a filthy E.T.
Kind of.
It's like an adult E.T.
That really is misleading.
Well, yeah. But it's kind of. As in, Simon Pegg and Nick Frost are two geeky Brits on a road trip across America. Sound ringing any bells yet? Sorry, not for other films, but that's what me, Paul, and a friend of ours did.
But we didn't find an alien, did we?
No, unfortunately not. Mm. We did pick up Russ, who could be an alien.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then they stumble across an alien in the middle of the desert who says, I've escaped from a government facility, please help me. And so they go on a road trip.
We did go to similar areas that they went to. We went to Roswell.
Went to Roswell. And
all that.
Yeah, which was quite cool.
And Area 51-ish.
I don't know, did we go to Area 51?
I
think we went past it.
Yeah,
one of them. It's just where they keep corn.
Yeah.
But no aliens. No official aliens, anyway. And then hilarity ensues as they try and escape from government agents and try and get into safety. And it's...
Does it?
Does hilarity. Yeah,
hilarity.
Which part of the sentence were you questioning?
Exactly.
Get into safety? Was that the bit you're questioning? Or no?
The weird thing is, it's odd, because I did enjoy this and would recommend it to people, but I don't know if it's because it's not an Edgar Wright film as well.
Yeah, I felt he was missing.
I felt it was missing something, but not. Mm. But that does it a disservice, because I laughed a lot and it's engaging and sort of rolls along, and I enjoyed it. I came away thinking, yep, I enjoyed seeing that film, and yet there's a slight quantifier.
It's
but
the
I
first
can't...
film that Peg and Frost have written together.
Yeah,
and I couldn't help but feel that they weren't ready.
Everything
for it yet.
Seemed to be a little bit familiar. As in, for example, Simon Pegg's character is basically a more reclusive version of Tim from space.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
And the references to all the other films are basically going, okay, it's a homage, but we're actually just nicking stuff.
No, see, no, that I quite, no, that I quite like. There were lots of
nice
geeky references
way,
that I quite liked.
But I just felt it made the film less real, less enjoyable, less easy to connect with, because you sort of go, and there's the reference to E.T., and there's the reference to Star Wars, and there's, oh, they've got Steven Spielberg to leave a voicemail, and oh, they've done this, and they've done that.
I
can understand your point, but at the same time, whereas you were sort of going, oh, there's another, oh, there's another. Yeah. Well, for me, when they were like, Jason Bateman shoots a radio at some point and says, oh, boring conversation anyway. And I thought, oh, it's a brilliant Star Wars reference. I liked the fact that it was a Star Wars reference,
but
which
some,
only
some
I seem to get.
Well, some work, and that was fine, but then sometimes it's just too coincidental when they turn on the radio and it happens to be Out of Space by The Prodigy, because it's all about space things. Oh, I see. Or they... you know, they go into the shop and there's an Ewok thing. There's just too many things.
Music.
I just thought, oh.
There are a few.
Yeah, the cantina thing, the cantina
see,
band.
See, I really like that as well.
That wouldn't happen. I'm suddenly going, well, this is, I know it's just a film, but I'm just, I couldn't engage with it in the same way. They go, oh, what'll I walk into next scene? That they'll suddenly bump into someone from some previous sci-fi film.
I think for me, when it's a film about, you know, picking up essentially a hitchhiking alien, I've kind of already detached from reality
enough. You've got to connect with it enough.
I don't mind
but
going,
the alien,
oh, I was connecting enough.
I don't know.
But the character itself of the alien was refreshing. It's kind of like a streetwise, very wise alien who's relaxed and conformed to society in a refreshing way rather than, you know,
and also,
challenging.
Because he crashed sort of 60 years ago. And so rather than pitch it as, oh, it's, you know, it's an alien who's picked up Earth's habits and attributes, it's more... He's responsible for a lot of our pop culture references because those people come to him for advice. So rather than just say, oh, he's been on Earth so long, he's picked up our ways, it's more we've indirectly or unconsciously been picking stuff up from him.
Well, that was interesting.
Because he's been influencing, you know, he's been giving people ideas for films and TV shows.
I mean, that is an original thought. That is quite good, but it's something. Some of the references, I must admit, some of them I felt quite proud of getting. I was there going, oh, yeah, I got that. That's good. But then the next one, they're going, oh, yeah, I got that. And. Oh, yeah, I've got that.
Tick,
yeah.
Tick. Boom. Yeah, I felt it. Pop it on, Chris. I just felt... But the little hints of originality of the thing like that with We Learn From The Alien, there were hints of that in there. You think, oh, Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, they've clearly... they could have made a really nice film with it. They could have done another Shaun of the Dead or a Hot Fuzz. And they've admitted in interviews that they had a lot of studio involvement in this one. And to get the budget and to make it a bigger film, they had to... put it past lots of rewrites, producers, the studio saying, don't do that, do this. Mm. And so what you could see, it could have started out as a really nice, geeky film, and instead it ended up as a geeky film, certainly, but much more broader, much more, you know, kind of, much swear, you know, they think, oh, well, let's board it up a bit, add a bit of swear in there, rather than get a real joke, real end of the scene, just have a bit of that. A lot of easy laughs, whereas... You kind of think that the little nuances from Shaun of the Dead and those sort of things were just there, just weren't there because they've been eked out in rewrite after rewrite after rewrite, and it was just
I can't see it. But that's why that puts the qualification that I had for it. But I still ended up enjoying it. While it could have been better, I didn't come away thinking it was a disappointment. Particularly, I still quite enjoyed it.
I did quite enjoy it, but. Actually, no, I'm afraid to say I was slightly disappointed because I really wanted
great that's the thing. I think in part that's our expectations about what we want a Nick Frost Sunfest film to be.
Yeah.
And while we may think or know that they can do better, the fact that they didn't necessarily up to what we wanted them to do doesn't necessarily make it a bad film.
Well, it makes a disappointment.
Yes, but my point is... No, but my point is a disappointment. You could say almost anything's a disappointment if you expect everything to be brilliant.
Okay. Well, yeah, okay.
Whereas knowing it's not an Edgar Wright film and it's not necessarily, you know, it would have gone through the studio process, my expectations maybe weren't as high, and so I wasn't disappointed.
It just meant the flashes of brilliance that were there, I thought, oh, that was... More of that would have been really, really nice.
Yes.
And instead I felt...
But that's true of almost any film. Could be a lot better.
But the very much obvious...
He's getting defensive.
I know. But the very much obvious... It would seem writing by numbers in that they've got their little storyline, little road trip, start, middle, end, or chasing by the you know, like Jason Bateman, who I thought was horribly miscast. He didn't have a...
Now this is going to be...
I wanted him as the agent beneath him. I wanted him as the comedy characters. I wanted him to do that.
Well, yeah, except that, funny. And without... Even my hesitation is already giving away. Without saying there's like a big twist as such, I thought the way the character ends up developing...
Well, that was okay.
He fits that.
Yeah.
For most of the way through, I was thinking he was an odd choice. Yeah. Except there are moments of very dry humour that character has. Mm.
So dry, arid, I would say. Sort of just...
Well, yeah, but that's no bad thing. Jason Bateman does arid humour.
But not funny.
I did look. I mean, yeah, well, the things like the idiot agents, and while he's on the radio, he just turned around and casually slaps him across the face. Made me laugh.
There was a lot of slapstick, wasn't there?
A lot of,
actually.
Yeah, and again, that's probably
too
the studio
many
size.
Fell over off screen, I thought, just in
yes, and Paul does get hit in the nads at least once.
Yeah, and... And the fact, I mean, it seemed very one note. Like I thought Christine Wiig.
Yes.
Christine Wiig. I thought was a very good choice of actress in it. But I thought her sort of one note comedy. Oh, she's her comedy character will be that she does lots of new swear words that she's just randomly put
but
together.
Again, I'm a child and I generally found
the.
Oh, yeah,
the first
I can
five
see that idea.
Pretty
yeah.
funny. By the 15th, I was okay. Mm-hmm. Let's find something else for her to do.
No, that's a fair point.
And the whole evolution thing, I thought was pretty heavy-handed. The her coming in, and I mean, maybe it's different in America, but I didn't see that as very real. That a Bible Belt person would walk in and just start an argument randomly about evolution.
The weird,
just didn't see
I,
that.
Yeah. Weirdly, I can see that, but only for a very. I mean, they've said in interviews they weren't trying to go for any sort of anti-Christian general thing. Mm. They were more trying to home in on the very specific hard right-wing blinkered character. And I think if they did a better job at setting her up as that, and sort of really show quite how far to one side she is pushed, then it would have made more sense. I mean, it does make sense. I think they also said there's a line. Which got cut, which I don't think is in the film. I think they said it got cut. Which is essentially where she says something along the lines of, so, yeah, there's no heaven or hell, there's no God, there's no nothing. And Paul basically says, well, I don't know, there could be, you've got to decide it for yourself. I've freed you to think for yourself rather than just being told one thing. Whereas, which I think would be more open than how it's left in the film, which is kind of him just saying, yeah, it's all rubbish, you can make up, you just ignore it all. And... Yeah, which I think would have made it slightly more nuanced.
Maybe. I think that the thing that summed it up for me was there's that scene, again, spoiling nothing particularly, but a scene where they're in a street and they're looking in a shop window and Simon Pegg just goes, oh, look, there's a little cowboy outfit. And then you think, oh, I wonder if that will come back again in about 3 or 4 minutes' time. And sure enough, it does.
Well,
you know, and it's in a kind of like in a joke that's been done so many times before. In American Dad do it. In everything's been done. Let's dress him up in a little. Of course they're going to do it, and people aren't going to notice that it's an alien in a hat. And it just that for me just okay. I can suspend disbelief, but only so far, really. And I wouldn't want to see a little box set in the shops, which is Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and this, because it's sort of a diminishing return.
That I can see. It's not the same kind of film.
No.
But I did still laugh.
It's just a shame. My kind, aliens without belly buttons.
Freak.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, but you do often dress as a small cowboy.
I do.
Yeah.
I'd love it. I love it.
Anyway, so ultimately... Could do better, could do worse.
Yeah. Into that.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Different
then.
Scale. Yeah, the mechanic we can trot through. Okay. Essentially, it's a Jason Statham film with slightly higher aspirations that ends up being just a Jason Statham film, which is a remake of a Charles Bronson film. And weirdly, reading the description of the Charles Bronson film, I thought the Charles Bronson one sounded sort of quite almost intellectual, quite slow paced. And then reading a review of the Charles Bronson film, turns out it's just as action heavy as this one is. Essentially, Jason Statham is an assassin who ends up, via a chain of events, sort of feeling responsibility for the son of a friend of his. And the son wants to get involved in the assassin business, so he kind of takes him under his wing and tries to educate him in how to do it all. And then it all starts going a bit wrong. And they get caught out and have to go on the run, and the company turns on them and hijinks ensue. But I think the original was a bit slower paced. And it's more the precision of how he worked and coming up against that. And in this, it's less obvious. It's a bit more general. Jason Statham is still pitched as a very clear-thinking, sort of plan-driven man who then this guy comes in and starts ruining things a bit. But it is essentially all ends up boiling down into car chases and gunfights.
Cool.
And it's all fine. And it all gets wrapped up a bit too neatly at the end as well. Because you kind of see where it's going too early. But it's all right. It's slightly higher brow than The Transporter, for example, or similarly.
That sounds like he's doing a selection of films about the motor industry, the transporter, the mechanic, seeing the trucker, the petrol station assistant. Yeah.
Yeah, and hopefully they'll improve in quality as well. But I mean, so it's, yeah, at the risk of coming up with an easy pitch line, it's essentially another Jason Statham film. You kind of know what you're getting.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's slightly more to it than I was expecting. But then having started off, you know, a bit more slow paced and a bit more character driven, when it then ends up with just gunfights and explosions, you're kind of a bit disappointed. Whereas if it was just non-stop gunfights action from the start, you go, hey, like The Expendables, you're not expecting a character. You just start, hey, brilliant, it's explosions the whole way through. And this is slightly kind of a film of two halves. But it's still all right. But one for the rental rather than cinematic obsessions.
Oh, fair point.
And very similarly, I thought Jen had a highly dramatic point, mate. She's just choking to death.
That is how good the mechanic is, according to Jen.
Brilliant.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. It's worth a bit of phlegm.
I made this.
You don't want to see what she's showing us right now.
Smeared it on your trousers. Oh, Jen, don't do that.
You disgusting.
Filthy. Oh, she's picked off and eating it now. That's just.
Gemma wouldn't do that.
Nom, nom, nom.
Oh, anyway, I love radio. You can make Jen do anything.
Why is this only just occurred to me?
Stop it! No, not pursuing this.
See now, are we? See now, everyone's wondering what we're doing.
Now I'm wiping it over John's head, and he loves it. He's wearing it as a new hat.
Why are you making up stuff like this, James?
You can't win, can you? Really can't win.
No,
sorry.
It's all fun and games when you're rubbing on your trousers, but then now you're just lying as well. And that's just double whammy, really.
There we go.
You've just let it down a microphone.
You now just coughed into a microphone.
That was just horribly disgusting.
Yeah. Paul has to speak into this on a regular basis.
Next time I use this at comedy night and come back with a cold, I know where it's from. Because Jen smeared her phlegm all over.
Exactly.
It's not a cold, it's just a bit of tea.
Is that right? Tea. Oh, you can smear that in your trousers, isn't it? So,
is that right? It's not disgusting at all.
I didn't smear anything.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Anyway,
smearer.
Speaking of Jason Statham and smearing. Oh no, there's no connection.
There's no.
I just said that to see the confused
look.
You
find a way to link
face.
It and never let me go. There is no way to do
that. Really. Except possibly The Island. I think we probably have.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Which is also kind of a film of two halves. And The Island, I think The Island is a film of two halves. Yeah. And this, Never
all,
Let Me Go.
All films are films of two halves, apart from The Neverending Story, which goes on forever.
Well, yes. No, but I mean, as in two different films jammed together.
Right.
The Island is very much like that. And Never Let Me Go seems like kind of a very high drama form of The Island. From what little I know.
Okay.
Well, this is already treading on the whole thing of how much do I give away.
Yes.
And I see, like I said on the previous episode, I would be prepared to give away the spoiler that no reviewer seems to want to, because it's in the first quarter.
Yeah, and it's also implied
it's implied
heavily in the trailer. So
yeah.
I've seen two forms of the trailer.
But
I think I know what you mean.
But also, giving that away makes people want to see it more.
It's in the setup. I think what it is, I think that it's because there's a scene about 10-15 minutes in. When we've seen some kids at a school, it's in like an alternative present day. There's been a couple of slides at the start with like a date thing of saying, oh, we're clearly in an alternate universe, and it's all about medical history, and there's medical breakthroughs in the 60s and 70s. And so we know we're in a slightly different place. We see a lovely school, and about four scenes in, there is a scene where a teacher sits them all down and says, right, here is who you all are.
Right.
But if you don't know it by that point, I think you haven't really been paying attention.
Yeah.
I think, generally, there's not many who would get to that point and go, oh.
I thought everything was entirely normal.
You know, you're not going to think that's Hogwarts. It's not a normal...
Yeah.
Well, I say Hogwarts is a normal school.
Yes.
I think they're all wizards. But no, there is... I don't think that's giving anything away.
Right.
But
even the trailer says something like, yeah, we found out. Yeah, we were told our purpose.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's... It's not a big secret.
Even so, I won't specify the C word. I will allude to it.
Right. I can't work out what the C word
the
is.
The C word?
Okay.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So, you know, just in case you really want it spoiler free, so technically I've given nothing technically away. Yeah. But yeah, it's based on a book by Kazuo Ishiguro.
Mm-hmm. Well done.
I learned that.
I'll just look over to see if it's written down. It's not. Well done, your brain.
And yeah, it's called Never Let Me Go, which every time I hear the title, I play in my head, is it Backstreet Boys? Don't wanna let you. No, it's five,
yes.
Isn't it?
Yes.
Don't wanna let me go.
Yeah. Is that the theme tune to this?
No. Afraid not. But it is. The title is taken from a song, which is actually a made-up song, but it's really quite well done in the film. It's a song that she's heard at some point from like the 60s, but it's actually been made for the film, so it's made to sound 60s-ish. Right. And a very, very sweet bit of music, which kind of sums up the whole film, really. It is a sad tale, a fable, really. Of what happens to these kids, and there's Carey Mulligan, Keira Knightley, Andrew Garfield, doing really good jobs, and as Caroline indeed, who emailed in and said that it's the best Keira Knightley film that she's ever seen, because Keira Knightley isn't in it much, and when you do see her, she's at death's door, which still requires pounting. So yeah. You know, there you
is
go.
That,
so,
is that not giving away plots?
Well, not really. No, death's okay. door isn't death.
Well, that's true.
Let's be fair. You know,
true. Arguably, so, we're all at death's door.
Well, exactly. Well, exactly. Yeah. That's kind of what the film was all about. Okay. The fact that we are all at death's door. There's a lot of
life is a terminal disease.
Pretty much.
Cheerful thought.
So that's how you come out going. So it's quite bleak, but it is very well done, and it's one of those that stayed with me for a few days. I keep finding myself dwelling on it and sort of reading more about the book and that sort of thing. And not reading the book, no, but reading the Wikipedia plot. You know, that's how I read books. Yeah. You know. So, but it did stay with me. But it is certainly a sad film and very well done, and completely ignored by Oscars and BAFTAs.
Yeah, which seems a bit surprising.
I think, by the sounds of it, because of the King's Speech, they thought they'd throw everything at that.
Yeah.
And therefore give that more of a chance of doing well at Oscars, which is a slight shame, because I think the performances certainly are very, very good. As Caroline actually says, well, the younger Carey Mulligan, and it's played by Izzy Meikle Small. Which is true, because she is small. But she is Meikle, who plays the young Kathy, and she is not only a dead ringer for Mulligan, but is entirely believable. Generally, I would recommend it, and do go see.
Fair enough. I shall.
But bring your tissues, or just leave my own and just walk out going.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's been it.
Yeah. Other emails we've got?
Have we?
We have.
What do they say?
I can't see from here. An email from Eric Down.
Hey.
Oh, yes, well, this is asking a question.
Oh, yes.
Which is, I'll also say to him, there is, on Movie Mistakes, you can submit these questions, and then you might get a slightly wider audience than this necessarily has.
Ah, okay.
But, you know, you can do that as well. Then there's a movie in the 60s or early 70s where a girl asks a guy if he knows the colour of her eyes as a test to see what he was really looking at. When I was a teen, I kept getting asked this, and someone told me they saw it in a movie, but couldn't remember the name. I always wondered. So, I don't know.
I've absolutely no idea.
No?
I've absolutely no idea.
But if you do, dear listeners, then email us in at podcast@moviebanter.co.uk and you can help Eric out.
There's a film I was trying to work out. I've Googled it and I cannot work out what it is. So, let me add to this feature.
Fair enough.
I'll make a feature of it.
Yeah.
Which is, saw it as a kid, it's one of these like compilation, slightly horror-ish movies, but not too extreme horror, but one of these like, what do you call them, compilation-y...
Sort of
like the Amicus films.
Yes,
they,
I know. So, like, there was one at Christmas a couple of years ago. It was like a Hammer horror.
Yeah, and they
like four different stories
together. Yeah, exactly. And it was a bunch of students in a house being told by their lecturer, said, "Oh, let's all tell scary stories and do a little test in fear."
Oh yeah.
And one of the stories was about a guy doing a late night radio station, and then there's a stalker outside the window, that sort of thing. And the other one that I particularly remember, which stays with me, was. Classic story of like honeymooning couple driving up Lone Mountain Side on a cold winter's night, and oh no, the car's broken down. Let's go up to that big scary house on the hill and see if we can get any help. And I think it's her birthday, and they go out there and they open and there's no one in the house. Ooh, all very scary. And they walk around, they find loads of blades and loads of cutlasses, and can they hear someone? They can hear someone, but they look and there's no one there. And they break up, and, you know, to go and look around.
Because that's
always a good idea.
And then I think it's that the guy then breaks off to go and try and find some help or to look for electricity or something. Because he's pitch black.
Something like a bucket of electricity.
And she then she's on her own. And then she hears something behind some big screen doors. And so she goes up and she's got these two massive swords.
Of course.
Obviously, you know, just ready to lunge if need be. And she hears the creaking and she hears there's definitely someone there. And so she, then suddenly the doors are thrown open. And it's the guy going, "Happy birthday!" And he's got a big cake and all her friends and family there. Big surprise.
And
this is all a big thing.
Stabs him through the
kills him.
Close. Well, she does kill him, but doesn't stab him. She gets the two swords and puts them like at crossways across his head.
Oh, nice.
And just slices his head off.
Hey.
And it goes up in the air and lands on the cake.
Of course it does.
And that's the end of that story. I mean, what a lovely... I think I saw that when I was about 12.
Nice.
That's really shaped my adolescence.
Thing is, that's...
Why would you then leave swords around?
Well, exactly. That's all quite a nice idea for sort of a little bit, slightly creepy, surprise party. But provided you don't leave weaponry in there.
Well, exactly. And also, I'm amazed that she let him get to the end of happy birthday before she then went...
Is that, maybe she just really, really hates surprise parties.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I know
you
are.
I didn't want to celebrate this year.
Exactly.
And you're all next.
I asked you to go to my favourite restaurant. Here we are. So anyway, if you know the name of that film, I would love to know what it is.
But yeah, remind me. I'll put it on my site as well. Because then people else.
I've tried Googling like all of. I've just written that down. Google.
No.
Rubbish. Google's rubbish.
She's in very creepy cake shops.
We've had an email from Jed who says, well, it's Oscar season, and that had me thinking of a new game.
Ooh.
That I think would be a lot of fun to play on the show. Dreamcast. I see what it did, the Dreamcast. It's like the
Nintendo
PlayStation.
Not the PlayStation.
Sega Mega Drive. I don't do gaming. I don't know what it's called.
It was a Nintendo Dreamcast. I can be wrong.
I have no idea.
It was Sega or Nintendo. Anyway.
Not so much a game.
We digress.
Winner or loser, but could be quite interesting. Basically, you come up with a movie cast of your favourite actors or actors you'd like to see in a certain role if budget was no issue. For example, he's given us his own Dreamcast here.
Okay.
Harrison Ford and Natalie Portman star as a crack father-daughter covert ops team who report to a firm but kind director, Morgan Freeman. And who are up against a sinister global terror network headed by a rich businessman, Liam Neeson, and a seductively deadly weapons smuggler, Angelina Jolie. A junior agent, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, is sent by a rival agency to follow them, but he ends up aiding them instead as he falls in love with the daughter. That's been made, hasn't it? I'm pretty sure that sounds really familiar. I think, that's also quite an insight into what films Jed likes to watch.
Exactly, so. And his own certain preferences.
Yeah.
You say certain preferences, if there's anything really deviant in that. His own preferences.
They're all very good actors.
Exactly.
I don't know whether I'd choose Harrison Ford to be, you know, that active.
I could be wrong. I believe this is his point about the game. As in, yeah, your own personal...
Can I?
No.
Comment?
No.
Okay.
No commenting allowed.
Okay, fair enough.
No, you just seem to be telling him he's wrong.
But do you need to specify when in their career?
Ooh.
Well, I suppose it would be nowadays. I mean, otherwise, you could say like Charlie Chaplin. And
could do, why not?
Natalie Portman.
If time and money was no issue, why not just settle?
Ooh, well, doesn't
money being an issue? What about time or probability?
Well, he doesn't say that time isn't an issue, though, or is an issue.
Well, maybe.
Although, arguably, if budget's no issue, then you take your infinite budget, develop a time machine, and then you can do whatever you want.
I wouldn't make films then, I'd just wander around history.
Well, that's true. You get bored eventually, surely.
And want to watch a film.
Yeah.
I always wondered that one thing we could do over several weeks is make a film by committee of like, well, you know, decide. One week we decide what genre it would be, and then discuss that. The next week we decide who would be in it, and then, you know,
that's
the actors and the scenes and all that. We could, you know, we could, like, what, you know, any good film, I think, would have to have, for example, you know, got to have a car chase in it. So you decide, okay, well, there's your car chase. And then you work out, you build it up. And then, because all films are written by committees now anyway, so we might as well do one.
So you could create our own monster.
You create our own beast. We should do that.
Fair enough. Yeah. So we start, just create it word by word.
But
week
what,
by
what,
week.
What?
Once.
That's this week done.
This week is once. The film once.
No, the word once. We're writing the script.
Okay.
So once. And then we'll do, like your average, several thousand word script over the course of the next several thousand episodes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So far, we know it's got the first word is once, and there'll be a car chase later in it.
Yes.
Yeah. Fair enough. Good, okay, we'll build on that.
I'm fairly sure Transformers 2 started filming with less than that.
I'm pretty sure you're right. Well, if you'd like to contribute to our film, email in any aspects you would like to be in it, and then we'll discuss it, and if we approve, we will let it in. If we don't...
Or nothing else, then it'll evolve into its own
thing.
Into
its own beast, So there you go. So who should be in it, scenes, that sort of thing. We'll make it happen. Jed sends us to his blog as well, themovieandme.blogspot.com, for his thoughts on the Oscars. So there you go. You can go and do that.
Cool.
Good.
Now, Morning Glory.
Oh, yes.
Right, steady on.
Nice link from Harrison Ford, because he
Well, because he's in it. Yeah,
yes.
Very true.
Ah, yes.
I won't. I was going to be rude in that, but I won't. Yeah, Morning Glory, it's a weird title, because it's a slightly innuendo-y title for a film that isn't especially innuendo-y. Mm.
Cheeky, sometimes.
Well, slightly cheeky. But yes, it's a slightly odd title. Did you see this one?
I've not seen it.
Ah, for real. No. Because it's in all the descriptions of it, they say, oh, it's a rom-com about a breakfast TV show. And it really isn't a rom-com. No. It's just a traditional comedy centred around a morning TV show that happens to have the main woman in it, who's Rachel McAdam, does get together with a guy in it over the course of the film.
Which is a subplot.
Yeah, it's kind of incidental. It's not really... Mm. The main focus is, oh, will they, won't they? That's kind of secondary to everything else that's going on. But it's clearly people just wanting to pigeonhole it into something. So they say, right, it's a rom-com. But it's not. It's just it's a comedy. But it's a consistently funny comedy. I actually laughed regularly throughout it. It's just quite nicely pitched and very likeable.
Mm. Mm.
With Harrison Ford and Diane Keaton being the hosts of the morning show. Rachel McAdams is brought in to sort of revitalise it. Or Diane Keaton is the host. The previous host gets kicked off quite quickly because he's useless. And Harrison Ford is a grizzled ex-newsman.
He is grizzled.
Yeah, very much so.
Yes.
Who is basically still on the books of this company. And under the terms of his contract, if they give him a job, he has to do it, basically. Or he loses. And they have no interest in giving him a job up until this point. Until Rachel McAdams says, right, you're going to host this new show. Because she genuinely thinks he'll be good for it. So it's her trying to steer him into it, and him and Diane Keaton clashing. Mm. And, yeah, just how it all evolves from there.
It's quite a touching story, in a way, because it's almost like a father-daughter kind of relationship that they develop, because she hasn't got a father. Father died very young while watching Harrison Ford doing the news. And so it's part of her history, and she's... What was it? They say that you should never meet your heroes. And she does, and he turns out to be a bit of a... think, to put it mildly.
He seems to be, almost for the first time in a film, playing
himself.
Harrison Ford.
Yes.
Because in all interviews, he seems to be a bit of a git.
Yes. And he is basically that. And it's got Patrick Wilson in it, who is, for the sake of argument, the rom-com love interest, but it's not as simple as that. Mm. And Patrick Wilson, who's from Watchmen and other films, was he in Little Children?
Maybe.
Cape Winslet.
I think he might be.
Yeah, which I haven't seen, but is very, as in he has done lots of other stuff. But I only know him from what?
Move on.
I didn't say, was he in Little Children?
You did say that.
Was he from?
No, you said he
was in Little Children.
Was he in Little Children? Really?
Yes.
I'm sure I said from. No,
you said in, but let's not dwell. Let's move on.
No, I think we should discuss my obsession with being in Little... Anyway.
Yes.
Little Women you could get away with.
Well, that's true.
Who was in Little Women?
How little are we talking?
I don't know.
Stop. Scary little... Anyway. Yeah, like but
Russian dolls.
Oh, there's a very wrong cyanide and happiness cartoon about that, which, anyway. Patrick Wilson, anyway, has a surprisingly good comic ability, which I wasn't expecting.
Mm.
Talking about Harrison Ford's likability, he describes his character, says, oh, Harrison Ford's the third worst person in the world. Someone then asks, obviously, who are numbers one and two, and then a joke ensues, which I won't ruin for you, because I laughed a lot at it. But yeah, it's just the story of this thing. And she gets brought in, trying to turn it around. Will she succeed? Well, I'm sure you can work it out.
Yeah.
Because I've seen films before.
Well, exactly.
Yes.
And Jeff Bridges is the station controller.
Jeff Bridges?
Not Jeff Bridges. No, Jeff Goldblum.
Yes. Oh, okay.
As the station controller, who doesn't have a huge amount to do in it. She just sort of pops up every now and again. But yeah, it's just a likable film.
It is actually a very enjoyable film.
But that's probably why it gets pitched as a rom-com. Because whereas something like Dodgeball is sort of a pure comedy, it's not kind of a slapstick comedy, really. So you can't pick out obvious, hey, it's just gag a minute kind of thing. But equally, it's not really a rom-com either. So if you're trying to sell it easily to an audience, I suppose you can really just say it's a rom-com. But it's really not. It's kind of like a 70s, not network, because that's not really a comedy. But that sort of... Was it Broadcast News?
Broadcast
was that
News,
comedy?
Yeah, that was good, yeah.
It's that sort of... Yeah. It's just a general workplace comedy.
Mm.
And yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think because I didn't know that much about it, wasn't entirely sure how it was going to go, and I was pleasantly surprised.
And Harrison Ford, even though during most of it he comes across as a bit of a miserable old so-and-so, he obviously, in Harrison Ford's style, has these moments of real likability. And also,
because we find out over the course of the film that he's not... I mean, he is just, you know, a miserable old man. Mm. But you find out why he's a miserable old man and, you know, that why he's not happy doing what he's doing, what he actually wants to be doing, and, you know, how they can make that work.
Well, now Harrison the character has found out, do you reckon Harrison the actor will cheer up a little bit?
No.
No, okay.
No.
Maybe.
I did find it amusing that it's about a struggling show called Daybreak, when in the country we have on ITV.
We do have
a struggling show called Daybreak.
Yeah. And also, the network that it's on is called IBS.
Really?
It's like Irritable Bowel Syndrome. Which seemed, and I'm sure it's called that in America as well, it just seemed like a... But it, they don't really make a joke of it. Mm. They only mention the name of the show a couple of times. Well, it just seemed a slightly weird choice to call it something that is a no-acronym.
If you're listening in America, email us and tell us if you have Irritable Bowel Syndrome.
Yeah, exactly.
Please do.
With photos, if
no.
No!
No!
Anyway, so yeah, Morning Glory, go and see it. It was surprisingly good.
Cool.
Yeah, good. There was an email I forgot what I was going to do as well. Well, it was not. It's a non-email.
You've made it up.
Well, Russ, our friend was going to email in about Beautiful, which is spelled B-I-U-T-I.
Yes, because it's all foreign.
Spanish film, I think it is.
Yes,
With Javier Bardem.
Otherwise known as Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Exactly. Javier Bardem. And Russ was going to email him, which I wish he did, and he didn't. But I could feel I can convey his thoughts on it, because he told me in the pub. And, well, simply put, I don't quite know what Mark's up 10 or anything, but he said, it's wooden and colours and...
I vaguely recall him saying something like it's like the most believable performance he's ever seen, or something like that.
Yeah, there was something about... special effects, but not special or effects, but they are special and they are effects. And the poster, and the moment before the poster happened, the moment after the image on the poster, and the moment of the poster.
Yeah, this is perhaps
why. This actually sounds a lot like Russ.
Yes,
that was it. That's, I'm just trying to recreate what he said. And so I think he liked it, but it's difficult to tell.
Yeah. This is almost why you shouldn't have film review conversations in the pub when drunk.
I can see why I didn't email in, actually, because how do you put that into words?
Well, yeah.
It's just a lot of vowel sounds.
So, it's like he's having a heart attack and trying to get help. So that's clearly good.
There you go,
it's not clearly good. It's possibly good.
Maybe.
Think.
I think it could be right.
You can tell. What is very good is Tangled.
Oh, yes.
Do you see this ball?
No. I have not seen Tangled. I wish I had, and I haven't.
You should.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this is
it.
Again, it's ye olde classic. Well, it's not ye olde classic Disney; it's modern classic Disney. And unlike, because it's Princess and the Frog, which is the last film Disney did, which was old school animation. This is all CGI, but it's also beautiful. It's a stunningly good looking film, and I mean just the style of it, but also just the little details of the effects, and because it's the story of Rapunzel with her with long hair, and so the hair has to be very, very good, and it is very good. And it's believable hair and moments of water and just the style of it is amazing. And it is a sort of an action adventure take on Rapunzel with her being a princess locked in the tower and then Zachary Levi, that's his name. I was trying to remember it earlier and forgot. And he plays the passing thief who breaks in.
Flynn, I think the character.
Yes.
Name, yes.
Who breaks in and then she wants to get out because it's her 18th birthday and she wants to find out the world. And then they go out and find the truth of her and explore the world and hijinks ensue. And, it's properly funny.
Everything
which I wasn't expecting.
Good.
The only thing that is slightly... Because much like Princess and the Frog, it's not... Mind you, I don't really know that classic Disney films that well. But things like Snow White, which I know had songs in it. Was it sort of a hardcore musical, all-the-time songs? Or is it just like, you know, there are a couple of songs in it?
I think there was about... Two or three?
Yeah.
Okay, this is much like that. There are one or two which occasionally fit and occasionally you think, all right, someone clearly thought we should have a song here.
I saw Dumbo and Pinocchio quite recently.
Oh, yeah.
Just for fun. And, I was surprised how little... They both had, like, one or two songs in it. And my memory was that it was non-stop music.
Yeah.
Actually, it's just the one or two famous ones.
Oh, fair enough. This is just like that. And I think they sound more like kind of... mostly forgettable West End musical songs.
But they'll be great for kids.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they're not bad at all. I mean, they just sounded like that to me. Mm. But they're also, at least one of them, sort of in a tavern where they turn up with lots of unsavoury looking characters. And so the song takes place with her dancing around with all these guys and jodding them along and works quite well.
Okay. A little bit like Camelot from Holy Grail.
Slightly, actually.
Oh, okay.
A little bit.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
But what I really liked, there were two characters who only had sound effects, and it was a chameleon.
Yes, it was like Pascal the chameleon and the horse called Maximus.
Who is brilliant.
And the horse is basically a horse who wants to be a dog.
Right.
But it's more, it's also like a bouncer.
And also a person. And it's a very funny, and they do a lot with just the visuals of certain,
the expressions of
expression in the face, looks in the
eyes.
Timing's
great.
Yeah. And just moments of comic brilliance.
I'm not saying much because I'm just smiling, remembering.
Well,
so,
I'm hoping to see it then.
It was surprisingly brilliant. And Mandy Moore is Rapunzel.
Oh yes.
And she can sing, so she does there.
Yeah.
And also, it kind of the character kind of looked like her as well. But yeah, so it's just worth watching.
Absolutely.
So go and see it.
Yeah.
It's extremely good.
Well,
be out of cinemas by now, but may not be.
It sounds like a DVD keeper.
Definitely is.
Well, it's good because Disney do little enough of those films, so you've got to make the most of them.
Well, it came up at the start saying this is their 50th animated feature.
Is that right?
So, yeah.
Well done.
Which over 76, 7, 8-ish years?
Yeah.
It's not too bad. Yeah. Not too shabby.
Fair play to them. Fair play to them.
I found their niche. I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, good. Are we haven't found any Desert Island Flicks.
Haven't thought about that at all.
On the fly. Best film.
What else? Best animated.
It begins with the letter Pi.
Pie.
Let's all agree on pie. Pie. That's good.
What else? What have we done? We've done Paul.
We've done Never Let Me Go.
We've best done Jason Statham film.
Mechanic.
Though.
I've only seen one.
Best Keira Knightley film. No. We could just skip it this week because
we have to. And go. Please, can you suggest some Desert Island Flicks titles to us? Suggestions.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, some categories, and then we won't run out.
We can just pick one.
Yeah.
Exactly. Good. Okay. Well, there you go.
So do that next time,
listeners.
Or if you haven't missed it, tell us that as well. We won't bother
next time. So do tell us Desert Island Flicks suggestions, please, and also suggestions for how to build on our perfect movie, which currently begins with once and has a car crash in it.
Yeah.
Car chase. Car crash or car chase?
Well, we don't know.
Probably.
We don't know.
Or maybe. What do you want? Car crash or car chase?
Is it just car crashes?
Yes.
Or a chase and a crash.
A crash and then a chase?
Yeah.
Maybe. But you tell us.
Yes.
We'll vote on it. You decide. And Jed, I know you've emailed in asking for us to send you some emails to you, which I don't think we have yet, but we will.
This is easier than replying.
So we'll just reply via voice.
Yeah,
they're on the way. We just keep forgetting.
Yes.
But we'll do that.
I think they may all exist.
I haven't got any, so it's up to you.
I haven't
got any.
Do you not keep your emails?
No.
Oh.
You'd have
them.
Come out of his ears if you did.
No, but it's the wonders of Gmail. You've got like gigabytes and gigabytes of storage. Yeah.
But then I'll break the internet.
No, it won't.
Will it? Or not?
If you filled up 7.5 gigabytes with emails, then you stop sending yourself porn.
Anyway.
Anyway.
Yes. Meanwhile. Bye.
See you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.